From National Public Radio, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. The Mississippi River between Baton Rouge and New Orleans is home to more than 130 petrochemical plants and some of the nation's highest cancer rates.
Previous governors have said we have to sacrifice the environment to get jobs. We now know that was a Faustian bargain, and we don't want to do that anymore.
Some say blacks living along the river bear an unfair share of the pollution burden.
America has to come to grips with the fact that for whatever reason, and we know it's race, Americans have said, don't put these poisonous chemicals in my backyard. Put them in the backyards of blacks and Latinos and Asians.
A tour of the Lower Mississippi on Living on Earth. First, this news.
This is Lisa Mullins. The Environmental Protection Agency says the amount of toxic chemicals dumped into the environment is down for the second year in a row. The newly released figures for 1989 still show industries in Texas and Louisiana releasing the largest amounts of hazardous substances into the environment, although at lower levels than the year before. Environmentalists criticized the study, complaining that hundreds of chemicals, as well as the facilities that dump them, were not surveyed. Environmental groups and their supporters in Congress want the federal government to require more complete disclosure of the chemicals used in industry. A new study suggests that the government has not been paying enough attention to one of the most important causes of death from air pollution, particulates, tiny, partially burned bits that spew forth from smokestacks and motor vehicles, appear linked to some 60,000 deaths a year. And as Stephanie O'Neill reports from Los Angeles, these findings could help spark a change that puts particulates into the same class as such pollutants as ozone, sulfur dioxide, and carbon monoxide.
Air pollution particulates are a much greater health hazard than the federal government believes. That's according to a Harvard School of Public Health study released in California during the American Lung Association's annual convention. The study shows that low concentrations of these particles produced by the burning of fossil fuels and a host of other sources are especially dangerous to elderly residents and to those suffering from respiratory and cardiovascular diseases. Joel Schwartz, co-author of the study, says as many as 60,000 people die each year in the U.S. from particulate pollution.
So the interesting thing is that we were seeing this down to levels that are way below the current national air quality standard for particles.
Moreover, he says, there may be no truly safe level for airborne particulates. Still, Schwartz says this study and other recent findings prove that lower federal particulate standards are needed throughout the nation. For Living on Earth, I'm Stephanie O'Neill.
A team of scientists just back from Kuwait says the government there appears to be downplaying the health risks caused by the massive fires now burning in the country's oil fields. David Barron reports.
The government of Kuwait has failed to protect its citizens from deadly air pollution from burning oil wells, say the scientists, who went to the Gulf on an environmental fact-finding mission for the Third World Academy of Sciences. Geologist Farouk Elbaz of Boston University, who headed the mission, says officials have made a serious error, calling the large black clouds smoke.
What we see is really an oil mist, a petroleum fog. And that, to me, is a great deal more dangerous than smoke or soot.
This mist of unburned oil, Elbaz says, is coating the lungs of people downwind, causing breathing difficulty and putting residents at risk of cancer. Elbaz suspects the Kuwaiti government has been reluctant to acknowledge the air pollution's danger for fear citizens might not return from abroad after the war. Officials at the Kuwaiti embassy in Washington could not be reached for comment. For Living on Earth, I'm David Barron.
This is Living on Earth. The Bush administration has won a victory on Capitol Hill as the Senate Energy Committee voted against imposing higher fuel efficiency standards for cars. But the issue is far from settled in Washington. Democrats who control Congress generally want car makers to produce vehicles that get more miles to the gallon than now required. They just couldn't agree on how high to set the standards. This vote is the first in what promises to be a long harangue as Congress and the White House wrestle to come up with a comprehensive national energy policy. Solar energy panels removed from the White House during the Reagan years are being taken out of storage and put to use again. But this time, they won't serve as emblems of change for the federal government, which first flirted with and then moved quickly away from supporting the development of alternative energy sources. Andrea De Leon of Maine Public Broadcasting reports the panels are now being permanently installed at a small college that specializes in environmental studies.
The solar panels were installed at the White House by President Jimmy Carter. They were put in storage 7 years later when the roof was repaired. A a decision that became symbolic of the new national energy policy in which the government virtually eliminated funding for alternative energy projects. Unity College's Peter Marbach says the school is pleased to continue President Carter's commitment to solar power. The White House paid $16,000 for the panels. Unity College will pay only a $300 transfer fee. If all goes as planned, the panels will be collecting solar energy instead of dust by the end of the summer. For Living on Earth, this is Andrea De Leon in Portland, Maine.
A new kind of brass could help get the lead out of tap water. Various researchers have tried to create lead-free brass for almost 50 years, but only now have engineers at AT&T's Bell Lab succeeded. This new kind of brass replaces lead with non-toxic bismuth. It could be on the market in 2 years. The EPA says lead in drinking water accounts for about a fifth of the country's lead exposure. And that's this week's News Roundup. I'm Lisa Mullins.
This is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. Louisiana, where the mighty Mississippi meets the Gulf of Mexico, home to catfish, crawfish, Cajuns, Creoles, and according to the Environmental Protection Agency, more toxic pollution than every state but neighboring Texas. Government figures also show it has some of the highest cancer rates in the country.
If you can come in time.
Among the modest wood frame houses in a black residential neighborhood in New Orleans, there's a typical organizer's office. One room is crammed with personal computers, boxes, papers. Another is full of chairs awaiting yet another meeting. This is the first stop on our tour of Louisiana's toxic plants, and our host takes us over to a large map on the wall.
This is where we'll be traveling tomorrow, between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. These dots represent petrochemical companies, which are about 140 between here and Baton Rouge. And a lot of people being poisoned. And, you know, just looking at Cancer Alley is a window to what's happening to America right now.
Cancer Alley. That's the name that Pat Bryant gives the corridor of petrochemical plants, paper mills, and hazardous waste dumps that line the lower Mississippi, between New Orleans and Baton Rouge. He says most of these plants are located near poor black communities. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, in every county or parish along this industrial corridor, cancer rates are rising faster than the national average. And 9 of the 10 parishes here have abnormally high death rates. The link between the plants and high rates of cancer and other diseases is only circumstantial. It's impossible to attribute an individual cancer, respiratory disease, or birth defect to a specific cause, but some residents here are convinced that local industries are making people sick, and in some cases, killing them. Pat Bryant is a former civil rights organizer and the executive director of the Gulf Coast Tenant Organization. In recent years, he's turned his attention increasingly to environmental issues. Bryant says local residents can't afford to wait for absolute proof that industrial pollution in the area does cause disease. So he has begun a crusade that has made him one of the most visible black environmental activists in the country, a crusade to clean up the plants along the river and prevent more from being built. Driving with Bryant along the Mississippi out of New Orleans, it's not very long before the air turns sour.
What's that smell?
That's ethylene oxide.
So what are we passing here?
That's coming from Union Carbide. That's their contribution to this toxic stew. And this was the smell that got us involved in the environmental movement. We just waged a successful campaign here, and people were concerned that their health was endangered and wanted an organization to look into it, and we began. That's how we began. That smell, ethylene oxide.
It's nauseating. It's overpowering.
Oh, yeah. Very. Ethylene is very bad on the respiratory system, body in general.
Now, the smell that we smell, is this chemical, is this a carcinogenic chemical? Oh, yeah. Does it cause cancer?
Oh, yeah. Ethylene oxide, yeah. It's said to cause cancer. They say they control it, and they release very little into the atmosphere. But chemists work along with us. We have chemists in our organization. They brought us out and helped us to identify certain smells, and they said that one is ethylene oxide.
Ethylene oxide is used in making antifreeze, laundry detergents, and polyester fabrics. It's also a known carcinogen. The 2,000-acre Union Carbide plant in Taft, Louisiana, can make over 1 billion pounds a year of this stuff, more than a fifth of the total U.S. production capacity. The plant also churns out 24 other chemicals, a half a dozen of which are known or suspected carcinogens as well. In 1987, the plant discharged more than 1.5 million pounds of pollutants into the air of St. Charles Parish, including more than 100,000 pounds of ethylene oxide. Union Carbide says emissions have been cut in half since then, and that the company plans to reduce ethylene oxide emissions further still, to less than 5% of 1987 levels. There's no hard science proving that the plant causes sickness in nearby residents, but Pat Bryant believes those who live in the village of Kelowna, just a few thousand yards away, have had their health compromised. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, the cancer death rate for females in St. Charles Parish is rising 18 times faster than the national average.
These are poor people who struggle to buy a little piece of property, some who rent from the plantation owner who sold to Union Carbide and to the other chemical companies. On the left, stop right here. These some folk I haven't seen in a while. Been this lady here I've been trying to find at least 2 months.
The village of Kelowna is virtually all African American. The land is flat and lush. Gardens flourish in the rich Delta soil. We stop in front of a simple one-story home. There's a hog pen to one side, dogs in the yard. The family is sitting on a bench outside the front door.
Hey!
Hey!
We got 2 new dogs since I came over.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing happening, boy. I want you to meet some folk. We were just riding up the river and they talking to folk.
We were talking about you.
I know you were talking about
me.
We hadn't really stopped planning to stop. I said, but let's go over and see Vanessa and everybody over here.
Yeah. Come on.
This is Vanessa Preston.
Vanessa, I'm Steve Kerwood. How long have you been living in this neighborhood?
All my life, about 10, 20, 30 years.
Since before the plant?
Oh, yeah, way before the plant.
So how did things change when the plant came along?
You don't smell them with all that bad chemical and stuff around you. Them awful smell, that's all.
Do you have anybody you know who's gotten sick from cancer? People get cancer here at all?
A lot of people have cancer, but they don't put it as the chemicals is the cause of it down here. They'll put it like it's your cholesterol or just inheritance in the family or something like that. They never tell you like it's that, but I think that when it comes, a lot of people die from cancer out here.
A couple of days ago, they let out something in air. And they call the sheriff department. He says it's not. They say it's not harmful, but they tell you to roll up your, put up your windows in your house, and shut all your doors. You know, and then that's all they say. They say it wasn't harmful. You know.
My eyes started burning. I started rubbing them, and after I put a cold towel on, then Marie called me. Marie said that they had an explosion to the plant. That's when I called the courthouse. The courthouse said it wasn't an explosion. It was a chemical release, and the best thing for us to do is just to close our windows and doors. But a lot of people's like outside, like standing in the road and stuff, and you know, a lot of people have their windows open in the projects and things like that. And I asked, I said, why nobody didn't say that? She said, well, it's nothing really the world, but it's just a little release that they let out every so often. I forgot how long, she said, how often they do it.
They released in 85 a huge amount of acrylene.
Yeah, because we had to stay with home 3 days.
A lot of people got pneumonia from it.
You know what caused it?
Yeah.
Because my baby had got sick from that.
Acrylene affects the mucous membranes very badly. There's a constant epidemic of pink, what they call pink eye, when I was a kid. Kids in the school here and adults have mucus. The mucus around their eyes is just running and it looks like a virus, but it's not. It's not a virus. It's just the chemicals affecting people's eyes.
They catch it like, ooh, they catch it so often. They might catch it like this month, next month they got it again. Sometimes it's 2 and 3 times a month they got it, but the doctor just told you it's pink eye. So you just give them a drop, the eyes get better, and before you know it, they got it again.
When are y'all going to kill the hogs?
Just kill them.
Just kill the hog when?
Last week.
No, that wasn't my hog.
Y'all didn't call me to come get no Bodine?
Food grows easily in the floodplain, but there's not enough farm work to support the community. The chemical industry says it's brought jobs to the area, but local residents complain that few of them get these jobs, and that those who do work at the plants often risk exposure to toxins. A man who identifies himself only as Frank worked at Monsanto, bagging a widely used weed killer.
I used to deal with it Roundup. Am I saying that? You'd be shipping that stuff out.
It's derivative of the same chemical Agent Orange was. And it's very, very poisonous. And it's really criminal because the people who handle it don't really know the effects of it long range and aren't paid very much to handle it. Like Frank, how much were you making, Frank?
Making $5.98 an hour.
What were you doing with the chemical?
I used to bag it from the hopper.
Does it get in the air?
Yeah, it'd be if the bag overrun, the whole warehouse would be dusty, white. Yeah, the way I respirate all the time while you're working around it, because it'll make you break out a rash, it'll give you allergy.
Do you have skin trouble when you're working there? Do you keep having any skin trouble?
Rash and stuff. A lot of people say, you know, when you take used to wear the uniform, the jumper, right, you take that and you wash it off, take it home and wash it off. But a lot of time...
You did what? You brought it home?
Yeah, you got to bring it home. That's the only way you can wash your jumper or your clothes.
And you wash your other clothes with it?
Yeah.
You know what happens when you wash clothes with those chemicals on it?
With all the clothes? What happens?
Chemical gets into other clothes and the kids get it.
Monsanto, Union Carbide, and over 60 other chemical companies in Louisiana have been taking steps to reduce pollution from their plants and getting results. Over the past 3 or 4 years, local industries have cut emissions by 50%. And just this year, the EPA dropped Louisiana from its ranking as the nation's number one polluter to the number two spot. Richard Kleiner is the public affairs director for the Louisiana Chemical Association, the industry's lobbying group.
I don't think it's fair to label the Louisiana Industrial Corridor and Louisiana in general as Cancer Alley. I don't think the facts back that up. In fact, I have some charts here I'd be happy to share with you. It says here, the most frequent and most lethal cancer in Louisiana is lung cancer. Extensive studies in Louisiana have determined that 90% of it can be attributed to smoking and could be avoided by eliminating smoking from our society. That's what the American Cancer Society in Louisiana is saying about Louisiana cancer.
Now, let's stop there for a moment, and let me ask you, do people in Louisiana smoke that much more than people in, say, a tobacco state like North Carolina or in Arizona or in Massachusetts?
They are saying that we do smoke more and at an earlier age in Louisiana.
So at this point, the Louisiana Chemical Association feels that the elevated lung cancer rates are probably not attributable to the environment.
No, we're not saying that. In fact, we agree with this last paragraph, which says environmental pollution may be a cause of cancer in Louisiana. The scientific studies carried out so far in Louisiana, however, do not suggest a major role for such factors. And we agree that much more research is needed before we can draw those kinds of conclusions, and we're committing over $250,000 to help support that kind of research.
Pat Bryan, Jesse Jackson, these people say that hazardous waste sites, petrochemical plants, are disproportionately located in black neighborhoods. That's the complaint. Is it a fair one? Is it a valid one?
I don't think it's the case that plants are moving in to neighborhoods or exist in neighborhoods because they're black. I think it has to do primarily with a geographic location close to rail facilities for transportation, river facilities, and port facilities primarily. Louisiana and Texas sit atop, for the most part, the nation's supply of oil, gas, sulfur, and salt. These are key ingredients for basic chemical production. And Texas and Louisiana together make up about 65% of the nation's petrochemical production. But I think that the chemical industry is beginning to realize that any expansion or new siting facility is going to be of concern to the community, whether it's black or white. And we're having to change our corporate culture and go out into the community in an open manner and discuss these concerns with our neighbors, who are going to be our neighbors if we expand.
How much is enough? At one point, do you feel that you can't put any more petrochemical plants or plastics plants or hazardous waste dump sites here along the lower Mississippi?
Public demand for the modern products made from the chemicals we manufacture will determine the growth of the chemical industry in the United States, because we serve every conceivable market you can think of. Our chemicals go into the automobiles we drive, hundreds of pounds of plastics. Textile mills in the Carolinas use our polyesters. Soft drinks that you drink every day contain phosphoric acid, which is a basic chemical that we produce here in Louisiana. So these chemicals permeate our lives. They make our quality of life better. They, in some cases, even extend our lives.
Probably the biggest catalyst for corporate change has been the changing political scene. In 1988, Governor Buddy Romer came into office determined to cut pollution and appointed University Professor Paul Tomplay Secretary of Environmental Quality.
Previous governors have said we have to sacrifice the environment to get jobs. We now know that was a Faustian bargain, and we don't want to do that anymore. In fact, now we know that you've got to have a good environment to have a good business climate.
But what kind of man is Pat Bryant?
He wants to shake the system up. Nothing wrong with that. That's part of the American scene also, part of democracy, and I have no problem with that. I think his major premise is that there are more toxic dumps, there are more industries locating in black communities than elsewhere. That's probably true. I don't think it's directly related to racism, although it's hard to discount. I think it has to do with economic levels and the fact that property values in the black community are lower than they are in white communities. And when industry looks for a piece of property, they find the lowest price.
Came around and asked us about it, though, how we felt.
Anything.
That's what really ticked us off. They have a grand plan, a master plan for the West Bank, but they're not including the black people in it because they want to move us someplace else and take the land and develop it to their need.
Wallace, Louisiana is on the west bank of the Mississippi River in St. John the Baptist Parish. It's a vast open green space sprinkled with small settlements and a few big old plantation houses. One of these plantations has recently been sold to the Taiwanese industrial giant Formosa Plastics, which plans to build a massive pulp rayon plant. Sam Jackson and Wilfred Green worry that their homes will be surrounded and their community poisoned by emissions from the plant.
They say they want to buy our riverfront and our land in the field, but not the houses. So if you sell that in the front and in the back, you're surrounded by a plant, and then they want first rights on buying your house if you want to sell it to anybody else. So that leaves you with nothing, you know, and they leave you living next to a plant which you don't want to live by.
So what do you think race has to do with this?
What I think race has to do with it? The same old thing that has always been in for the last 100 years or more, and in fact I can say as far back as I know myself. The white man has always said what? Keep them ignorant, conquer them, and divide them. Fortunate I was able to go away to school, but it always has been the philosophy of white man. Don't let a Negro learn how to read, because if he learns how to read, he'll be able to educate himself. Don't let him learn how to count, because if he learns how to count, he'll be able to count his own money. And that is the philosophy here. It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. Look at the school system here. One of the poorest and the worst in the country. But still, they talk about how much tax break they're going to give to somebody else. Well, how in the heck can you give a plant $400 or $500 million worth of tax break over a 10-year period and you can't improve the school system? That's pretty sad.
Formosa is getting no more of a tax break for St. John than any other industry wanted to locate here in Louisiana.
Lionel Bailey is the environmental director for Formosa Plastics' proposed plant in Wallace. Like Jackson and Green, Bailey lives along the river, just down the road from the site.
You all pass along the river on the west bank. You see what type of deplorable shape is in. And I'm getting these environmental activists talking about you're really messing up a green belt, an area that's set aside. Set aside for whom? Set aside for people to pass through and say, that's the way they used to live, and they still live like that? You got some intelligent people on the west bank of the river. You have people traveling 20, 30 miles away to jobs. You have people leaving home for jobs. I think with Formosa coming in, with their commitment to 75% of the employment from the West Bank, it gave a chance for that community to grow.
Why do you suppose that Pap Ryan and those people are making so much noise about your plan?
Well, you have the environmental activists that haven't come to the realization that industry and a community can coexist.
You have to take a look in this community at the number of black people that live around here. Out of all the people that live around here, I would say 80 to 85% of them are living on welfare. What's going to happen to these poor people? Who's going to take care of them?
Well, the company says, we're going to put a plant here, we're going to give you all jobs.
How are the company going to give them jobs when we are lining with jobs all up and down this river, all of them on both sides of the river, and we still don't have anything? So you mean to tell me that one more plant is going to come in and solve all our problems?
Wilfred Green and Sam Jackson say that after years of unchecked industrial expansion in Louisiana, the tide may be turning. They see that their efforts have helped delay the Formosa plant and feel confident that they can ultimately scuttle the whole proposal.
They were supposed to build that plant 2 years ago. We delayed 1 year and we delayed another year. So I figure if we can delay it till after the fall election, we will win.
You get rid of the politician at the end there now and put somebody in that to see things like we see it.
Stopping the Formosa plastics plant would be a major victory for these residents of the lower Mississippi. But Pat Bryant says the larger battle for the environment involves a lot more than politics.
America has to come to grips with the fact that for whatever reason, and we know it's race, Americans have said, don't put these poisonous chemicals in my backyard. Put them in the backyards of blacks and Latinos and Asians. Put them in their backyards. Until race has been firmly dealt with, not only has it dealt with the environment, but everything else, we will not be able to have a sustainable environment.
And for this week, that's Living on Earth. Our program is produced by George Holmesy and Peter Thompson, with help from Randy Dawn, Colleen Singer, and Deborah Stavrow. Our studio engineer is Jim St. Louis. Living on Earth is produced in cooperation with the Public Media Foundation and WBUR Boston, with editorial help from the World Paper. Our theme music is composed by Michael Aaron. I'm Steve Kerwood. If you would like to comment about this program, please write to us at Living on Earth, Box 639, Cambridge, Mass. 02238. That's Box 639, Cambridge, Mass. 02238.
Funding for this program is provided by the Public Welfare Foundation, with additional support from the W. Walton Jones Foundation, the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation, and the NPR News and Information Fund.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.